Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Brian E. Roach and Zach Meckler.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast, brought to you in part by MyBookie.ag and our official partner, TSE Total Sports Enterprises. My name is Brian E. Roach, and right now I'm just too aggravated and tired to make up a cute reason of why I'm the host who doesn't like something. Instead, I'm just going to say that for this edition, I'm going to be joined by Zach Meckler, a contributor here at SCU, as well as GZ. I'm going to screw it up. What is it?
GZ Sports Report.
There you go, GZ Sports Report. Zach, welcome aboard. Glad to have you back on the podcast.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it after a fun-filled weekend of NFL action.
Absolutely. It was, you know, this isn't on our agenda, but let's touch on it anyway. It was a crazy weekend. Now, you know, as you, I'm sure, are aware, as are many others out there in the world, we aren't even supposed to be here anymore. The world was supposed to end Saturday. You know, apocalypse was coming, Planet X was going to fly through space, devastating the Earth and killing us all. Funnily enough, that didn't happen. But the reaction of some of the fan base certainly would make you think that the world had, in fact, ended, if it not on Saturday, then maybe on Sunday. And I will tell you that maybe Planet X didn't destroy us, but maybe it threw off some wonky waves as it passed by and did something, because this was a crazy weekend in the NFL.
I think you hear a lot of those sayings where the stars had to perfectly align for some of these things to actually happen. And, you know, it didn't strike Earth. But I think realistically, look at some of the reactions of fans, not just Steelers, but fan bases across the country. You know, it was a catawampus weekend for NFL football. You know, I watched numerous games this weekend. I was flipping between channels, getting some of the action. And I'll tell you what, it's been a while since I've seen this type of up and down, whether it be pregame, postgame, during. It was crazy from start to finish.
You have to turn in your millennial card for using the word cattywampus.
trying to break that mold. You know?
I'm just letting you know. yeah, I mean, look, we maybe should have had you know, a hint that this was going to happen when you look at that original Thursday night game, because you know you have a game between the Rams and the 49ers. That prior to the game, everyone is tweeting about how, gee, NFL, why are you putting the absolute worst possible games on Thursday night? You really don't want anybody to watch them, do you? And yet that turned into a fantastic game with a lot of back and forth. But at the same time, you do have to kind of go, hey, wait a minute. This is the San Francisco 49er team that only managed like 12 points in the previous two games, and they're putting up 39 and losing.
Yeah, you know, you look at it, I mean, myself included, I've been a fan of the Rams defense for quite a while. Maybe it's because of Aaron Donald and my love of defensive linemen. But I, you know, I did not think that it would go that high, especially from the 49ers offense that has produced so little so far this season. You know, you can make the argument that Kyle Shanahan's the offensive genius that he is, because quite told he is. But I think realistically, they have no weapons on there. Brian Hoyer and Carlos Hyde. You know, if you want to consider Brian Hoyer to be a legitimate quarterback in the league, you can. I think he's more of a backup. But beyond Carlos Hyde, they don't really have a whole lot of weapons. And to put up 39 points against that defense that's supposed to be so impressive in L.A., you know, it was very surprising to say the least, and definitely gave me some good action to watch on Thursday night for a game that I thought was going to be a, you know, snooze fest the entire time. So it definitely proved me wrong.
Right. And so we jump right from that to, you know, the Ravens getting their posteriors handed to them in London by Jacksonville, 44-7. The defense of the Ravens had been touted as another one of those elite defenses that will carry them into the playoffs, and the strength of their defense will make up for the weakness of their offense. And then they played in London.
I think single-handedly that might have been Blake Bortles' best game as a pro, and it's not even close. They made him look like reminiscent of almost an Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre-type quarterback. I hadn't seen him read through his progressions that well or make the throws that he was trying to make really in his entire time being in the NFL. If you told me that the score was going to be 44-7, I probably would have, you know, taken any odds against that, because there was no way that I thought that was going to come down to it. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to catch most of the game. I got myself up early enough to do it for some early Sunday action. But the the Ravens just did not look defensively like the same team that we've seen so far through 2 weeks, and they've had games against the Bengals and the Browns. But, I mean, good Lord, the Jaguars are nowhere near a high-caliber offense. But to be able to do what they did, I didn't see it coming. I don't think many people did either.
Yeah, over 400 yards of offense. Bortles throws for four TDs, no picks. And, you know, at the end of the day, not that this is tremendously surprising, but Flacco has a quarterback rating of 12.
Yeah.
I've never seen a quarterback rating quite that low for a guy who played the better part of three and plus quarters of a game. 12.
It's something that I feel like you can only do on Madden, on all Madden, when you're playing against like your real cousin or something. You know, I've never seen a professional quarterback play a game that poorly. You know, I've been rough on Joe Flacco before. I still think to this day he still has one of the best deep balls in the league. Is he the franchise quarterback worth that he's getting paid? Not necessarily, but I didn't even think he was that capable of doing that type of a performance. It was really just something. I don't know if it's the injuries just mounting up in Baltimore, but it was horrendous to say the least.
Yeah, and it just kept going from there. Buffalo beats Denver. New Orleans comes to life and beats Carolina. You know, Atlanta barely escapes from Detroit with a 10-second runoff because of an overturned catch that actually goes in the Lions' favor, but they end up losing the game because they have no more timeouts and they have to run off 10 seconds because it occurred within 10 seconds. It's crazy. The Colts come to life against the Browns and beat them. Minnesota beats up Tampa Bay. New England barely escapes in their own house, the Texans, with a rookie quarterback who they let throw for 300-plus yards. And then the Jets womp the Dolphins. Many people didn't think the Jets would win a game. And you know, it just continued all day to the point where when Green Bay and the Bengals played, you had no idea what to expect. And even then, you didn't expect the Bengals, who hadn't scored a touchdown all season, to put up 21 points on Green Bay. And you assumed, okay, wow, the Bengals have come to life. And then they end up losing the game.
Yeah, you know, it's I think people need to realize the season's still young in these teams. The preseason's designed now, and so many teams benching their starters throughout most of it, except for their tune-up games, have an identity yet. You know, they're still trying to find who they are, trying to establish some chemistry on both sides of the ball. And you see guys, I mean, if you told me that Deshaun Watson would take the Texans into New England and put on the performance that he did, I wouldn't believe you. If you told me that the anemic Bengals offense that we've seen so far would go into Green Bay and do the things they did to that defense and make Aaron Rodgers look like not that great of a quarterback like he is, you know, I wouldn't believe you, you know. So it's still early in the season. These teams are still trying to find their way. I think that's why you're seeing so many of these close games against games that you never would think would be that close, because in midseason form, you know, the Falcons don't come that close to losing. You know, the Patriots don't come that close to losing. The Packers don't even think twice about giving up that game and coming in overtime against the Bengals. So the fact that it's week three of the season, teams are still developing. There's a lot of football left to play. But I think a lot of the things are making these games close too. Maybe it's just me. I'm not one to complain about officiating or reffing or anything like that nature. I like to give the refs the benefit of the doubt. But looking at these games, there's so many penalties being called, and a lot of them are being called incorrectly, or they're being called not at all. And, you know, realistically, some of these plays, I know you saw some in the Steeler game, there were just calls that just were missed. And I know they can't make every single call, especially when the games are close. But at some point, something has to give.
You know, oftentimes you will hear the announcers say, oh, that's great, the refs are letting them play. And I get that, you know, a little, like, I'm not one that every ticky-tack foul is pass interference and, ooh, he, you know, he touched his hip with the tip of his pinky. That's PI. But at the same time, yesterday, I was going back through, because I was so aggravated at times. I was watching it here at home, and I have, you know, the Sunday ticket, so I'm fast-forwarding and rewinding different plays. And, for example, the one of the long balls to Martavis that he didn't even have a chance at, but the call doesn't get made because I have no idea why. Because I stopped it, and before the ball is ever in the frame, the Bears defender is already wrapped around Martavis Bryant. You know, his arms are wrapped around him. He's pulling his arms down. But, no, that's not pass interference. And then, of course, there's a call on Antonio Brown. Oh, that's an uncatchable ball. There's no such thing when you're throwing a ball to Antonio Brown. I felt like they were not just letting them play. They were essentially saying, we don't care. Do whatever you want. And that even became more blatant throughout the game when holding was being done in the most egregious fashion right in front of refs. And you know, I hate to call it that last drive in overtime, but, you know, the first run, there's clear holding on the end. The second run, Artie Burns is getting mugged right in front of the ref, and they're not calling it. And, you know, I am a ref stink kind of guy. I think they stink. I think they have continued to stink. I thought they stunk last year, and I was pleasantly surprised in the first two games of the season that I didn't feel compelled to go back to that mantra. That's all over. The refs stink.
Yeah, and, you know, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like I said, you know, I've had my fair share during my playing time with bad refs. You know, you see calls that just want to, and fans obviously are going to have their own fan bias. When I went to the Steelers-Browns game week one, I was sitting up in Browns heaven and disguised as a Steelers fan. And I tried to sit there and I look at the calls the refs are making. I try to be as objective as I possibly can and take my bias out of it, wanting to have the, you know, favor of the hometown team. But at some point in time, the calls that are being made, they're right in front of you. And I understand the concept of wanting to let the guys play, let the game just go and flow. I know there's some times when the games are close, it's hard, and you have the pressure of not making a big call or making a big call. But when it's so blatantly obvious, there's a time to let the game be played, and there's a time where you have to do the right thing. If that's making a call that's very flagrantly a holding or very flagrantly a pass interference, when there's just too much going on, you have to make that call regardless if you're, it's in favor of the away team and you're afraid of the reaction of the home crowd. You know, there's something that has to be done. On that last drive in overtime, you know, the holding was there. I mean, there's no way to put around it. I'll sit there and I'll argue and defend the offensive lineman all the time because, you know, it's so hard to have a true 100% clear holding penalty. But those flags that weren't being thrown should have been, because it was blatantly holding. When you're trying to, the minute your hand starts getting outside the chest square, and you start getting around the outside of the shoulder pads, and the guy's direction, he's clearly trying to break away, and you're holding going in the opposite direction, that's holding. Not every single time, that's holding. And to not call that, especially in that situation, it's egregious. You know, you can't not make that call. And to see the refs continue to do those types of things, I'm losing my patience with them, because something that's blowing games. Now, obviously, the Steelers shouldn't have been in a position at that point in the game anyway, where it comes down to a bad call on a big run. But it's just something needs to change with these guys. The Zebras out there are not at all quality to the point where they should be for the National Football League.
Absolutely, and in no way, shape, or form do I ever equate the refs stink with that's the reason the Steelers lost, at least not normally. This is not the reason the Steelers lost this game. As you said, they should never have been in that position, but it certainly didn't help. Now, the thing about this the refs stink is, as you were indicating, a lot of fans will always turn to this, and every call has to go their way, and when a ref says that it's holding, it's never holding if it's on your team. And as Adam Crowley, who I'm now going to give my second shout out to Adam Crowley, not that he cares or listens on this podcast, but I have given Adam Crowley grief for a couple things. One of them is his refusal to actually live up to his bet and wear a romper, a male romper, live on his show, because he tweeted out, if I get 100 retweets, I will wear a male romper, and he reneged. He didn't do it. So I continue to give him grief. Everyone should use hashtag Crowley's romper in tweets over the next week and just annoy him. But the other thing is, he is a very adamant believer that the Steelers fan base is maybe the most spoiled fan base in football. And I can't really disagree with him. I mock him for saying it, but in a more I agree with you, but I'm tired of hearing you say it, Way. And you know, I think it's true. We are used to winning, and we've forgotten, some of us, especially some of us at SCU, haven't forgotten because we weren't alive when the evil early 80s occurred. But we've forgotten what it's like to not have a team in contention all the time. And the Tomlin haters and the Haley haters and the everybody else haters forget that we haven't had a losing season in I can't remember how long. So, you know, certainly not since Tomlin's been around. And so the last one was probably Cowher. We are spoiled by success, and I can't disagree with that statement.
Yeah, I think you're going to get technical. I'm pretty sure the last time that we had a losing season that was definitionally below 500 was the 2003 season, which led us to the 2004 11th overall pick of Ben Roethlisberger. I think that was the last time that we dipped below 8-8 as a team. You know, I believe that record was 6-10. So even then, that's still not the bottom of the league. I tend to agree with that. You know, I lump myself in there because I come off maybe sometimes on social media as a guy that go wrong. And, you know, I always try to look at the bright side of things with the team when there are clear, glaring issues. But the thing is, you know, it's to an extent, and they have every right to be, when you're used to so much success and you see all the things going on there, it's easy that when you lose a game and they have an ugly trend like the Steelers have of dropping games, it seems that they very much are better than, you want to point the finger someplace. You want to say, oh, it's Tomlin's fault. Oh, it's the Ben's fault. It's whomever's fault. And, you know, someone is to blame for that. But at the end of the day, there's teams that would give to have the track record that the Steelers have over the last however many years, you know. But at the same time, people forget that it hasn't always been sunshine and rainbows for the Steelers. For the first 40 years of our existence, it was a joke, you know, with Mr. Rooney buying the team for $1. It's the team was nothing until the 70s turned it around, and then there's that dreaded 80s. You got to the 90s, Cowher started turning it around a little bit with that Super Bowl appearance against the Cowboys, but then there was some other rough times again where the team was good but wasn't fulfilling the standard of winning Super Bowls. And, you know, the fact that we have 3 Super Bowl appearances in the past, I guess, no, before Super Bowl, 3 Super Bowl appearances. Wow.
3,
I guess myself. In the last decade and a half, you know, that's something that a lot of teams would give for. And I think there is the expectation that the Steelers are supposed to make it to the playoffs. They're supposed to be in the Super Bowl every single year. You can have those expectations all you want to, but at some point in time, you realize that's just not the way football works. I'm a firm believer that football is an any given Sunday type of sport where, you know, maybe the Steelers play down to their competition. But maybe there's also this reverse argument that maybe other teams just like playing up to good teams. It makes their fan base excited. They know that the Steelers have the track record they have against bad teams. So they say, hey, if anyone else can do it, so can we. And they go in there and they do well. I think you see that every week when you see bad teams playing up against good competition.
Yeah, absolutely.
The notion that the Steelers don't prepare for these games, I think, is terrible. They're professional athletes. They prepare for every game the same. Tomlin's not just walking in there with a batch of cupcakes on Monday saying, all right, well, we don't need to practice this week because we're playing the Bears. That's not the way the NFL works. No team does that.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's hard to look into players' minds and look into players' hearts and wonder, especially in a week like this where the Ravens are coming up next, whether they do look ahead and take things for granted. But they still are preparing. And, you know, for the most part, these guys are getting paid. They got a lot of pride in what they do. They are professional players. And, you know, they take their work seriously. It's really unlikely that they are just being lax. I just don't buy it. What disturbs me right now, though, is, you know, I understand the trend to get, you know, internet muscles, right? And you're bolder and broader because it's, you know, the anonymity of the internet, and, you know, nobody can really make you suffer any consequences for the generals based on what you're saying. But the vitriol that's been spewed after this particular game, and I get it, and I don't want to get into it. I've said this multiple times. I'm not I'm not going to play into the politics of the situation, but there were certainly more emotions this weekend than in most other weekends. And from that's from the player standpoint as well as the fan standpoint. But a guy tweeted out, and I think you probably saw this in the SEU back room, a guy tweeted out after the Steelers had noted that they landed at home that he wished the plane would have crashed. Well, really? I mean, that's taking things to a level that is just beyond nonsense. You know, this the sky is falling and you all need to, you know, crash in a plane. Where is that coming from? Because it's one thing to be a spoiled fan and want success and to, you know, throw a hissy fit and break your TV and do those kind of things. It's another to wish death on people.
Yeah, in my eyes, there is zero room for that in life in general, let alone the NFL. You know, these guys take whatever feelings and opinions you have about the entire situation or everything that took place this week, and there's no need for that. You know, it's social media is a very dangerous place in my eyes. You know, I think it's a blessing and a curse for the society that we live in today. It's a great way of connecting with other people, getting ideas that are beneficial out there. You know, there's a lot of, it's a cesspool of just negative energy more often than not. And that's a very prime example of it. And that's something that no matter how spoiled you are, like you said, there's no reason to be posting stuff like that out there. You know, these are guys that have families, have people that care and love about them. Just because, you know, you think that they have this quality or they lack this quality as a person off the field and you don't agree with that, there's no reason for you publicly saying that. There's no place. Like I said, there's no place in football. Football and sports in general should be a place that you have, you know, you have rivalries, you have competition and things like that, but it's all supposed to be a unifying thing that brings people together. And when you have comments like that being posted on the internet behind a anonymous screen, so to speak, it's just too much.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I would never have bet that I would see that kind of hatred come up. But, you know, there's a lot of things I wouldn't bet on. But then again, I'm not really a betting kind of guy. I don't have enough faith in what I'm predicting to actually spend my money betting on it. You know, a lot of people do like to bet, and oftentimes, since we are the black and gold standard for Steelers coverage, they will ask us, who should we bet on? Or, you know, what's the spread going to be? And while, you know, I'm not going to pretend we know it all the time, the one thing we will consistently say is that it's sometimes as important where you place your bet as it is who you bet on. And in that circumstance, we always recommend mybookie.ag. They've got a rock-solid reputation. They've been around for years. And they have a great mobile interface and web interface that allows you to get on, check the different spreads, check what you want to bet on, and get your bets made. As a bonus, if you go and you sign up using the code SteelCity and you put your first deposit in, mybookie.ag will offer you up to 100% bonus. So if you put 100 bucks in, you might have 200 bucks. It's almost like you're making money for doing nothing at all. The best thing about mybookie.ag is they have an industry-leading turnaround time. You make your bets, you win, and in 2 days you get paid. So take a chance. If you're a betting guy, a betting gal, you like to bet on things, go to mybookie.ag, make your bets, win, and get paid. But you know, Zach, to get back on topic and what we were talking about, you know, the other thing that I've noticed a lot is, you know, people complain about the fact that they don't win every year. And their excuse is, well, if they don't win the Super Bowl, it's a horrible season and you should feel terrible about yourself because participation trophies are terrible and nobody should get a participation trophy and you're just a big old snowflake if you're happy with a decent season. Well, that's silly too. This isn't a participation trophy sport, right? You know, nobody is going, oh good, we got a trophy for coming in into the AFC Championship game. But there's only two teams that make it to the big game. And you can still have a season where you go, I'm not happy we didn't make it, but it was a pretty good year. To say that that equates to a participation trophy and you're just, you know, too warm and cuddly is also, I think, taking it a little too far.
It is. You know, I look at every Steelers season as a new chance and opportunity for them to go and make a deep playoff run and potentially make it to the Super Bowl and win it all. You know, I think every fan has that mindset because we've been used to seeing it so often in the past. But the notion of that it's a participation trophy sport and that we shouldn't be satisfied for anything less. You're right, we shouldn't be satisfied for anything less. But there's years where it's a good year that just didn't end the way you wanted it to. You know, I look at a lot of teams in the past that should have been better and won a Super Bowl and didn't. I look at that entire dynasty that was the Indianapolis Colts in the early 2000s when you had Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison, Edgerrin James, that offensive line that they had led by Tony Dungy. They had one Super Bowl. You know, that team, that team had the caliber of a talent on it to win a lot more than it did, and they didn't. You know, Aaron Rodgers has been in the league now for a decade, and he has one Super Bowl. And he's been on plenty of Packers teams, and I think most people put Mike McCarthy in the top five of NFL coaches. At least I know I do. And yet he only has one Super Bowl victory. The Patriots have been a dynasty since time for a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of people alive now that don't know a world where Tom Brady hasn't been running the NFL. and you look at it, the Patriots have a team that could have won a lot more Super Bowls, albeit they do have a lot. But they could have done a lot more with the logic that a lot of fans have. But like you said, there's only two teams that can make it to the Super Bowl, and only one team can win it. And we all want it to be our team. We all want it to be the Steelers. But it's just not realistic. And to say that anything less is just a participation trophy, that's a terrible mindset in my mind.
Yeah, it leads into the way that they look at a loss and the frustration and anger that seems to come from it, especially for some reason right now with the group of individuals that we have. But, you know, you and I have talked about this offline, and all of us have talked about it in SCU, and I know some of us have written about it as well. The truth is, this isn't really that unusual for this team. In fact, it's not out of the ordinary at all. They tend to start slow. And I talked to the Bears brothers about this, and I, you know, when I was a guest on their podcast, and I said, you know, because they were very, well, there's no way we're going to win. And I said, don't say that. Not because I wanted to jinx the Steelers, not because I really thought the Steelers were going to lose the game, but they're not the same team in the first four games, that which is September football, that they are the rest of the season.
I mean, I think that's pretty straight and clear. I know Tom Pelissero tweeted the other day. I think it was the Patriots, the Steelers, Packers, and Seahawks. And he did the September winning percentage, and then he did the rest of the season winning percentage. And the Steelers' percentage in September, statistically, I'm not sure over what time span he was looking at, but they're only 583, you know. For a team that on average is winning about 10 to 12 games per season, 583 is not a good thing. But if you look at the rest of their season, their winning percentage is 667, you know, which is really, in my opinion, I think it's probably one of the better winning percentages of any team in the league that's not named the New England Patriots, you know. So this, we've seen this before. We've seen it last season. I know there was a couple years back, I believe it was Le'Veon Bell's rookie season, that was in 2013. The Steelers started 0-4. You know, and they made that late season push. They finished season 8-4, and obviously they just missed out in the playoffs due to that last minute infamous San Diego field goal. At least sticks out in my mind. But you know, they always start slow. The same story happened last year. I know we the Eagles 34-3. We got blown out by the Dolphins. Ben got hurt. Everyone's riding the season off. And then they do what they always do in the second half of the season. Once the chemistry clicks, the rhythm gets going, players start to find their niche with the team. You start seeing what we're used to as Steelers football. And luckily for the Steelers, they play better at home. And if you're going to make that whole trend argument about playing down the poor teams on the road, I mean, we play our last eight games, we play five of them at home. You know, so there's always these things to look forward to as the season goes along. It's week three. I'm not going to get excited about whatever happens. I mean, at the end of the day, you can say we've played poorly. We're still 2-1. You know, it's still a winning record. That's still tied for first place in the AFC North. That's still where you want to be at this point in the season.
Yeah. And you know, the flip side of that, Steelers play down to bad teams, is that they do tend to play better against good teams. Aditi, whatever her last name is, which, you know, I repeat constantly, I can't pronounce names, so I'm not going to try and butcher her name. I'll just call her Aditi, as if we're friends. But, you know, she tweeted out over the weekend that, you know, against bad teams, the Steelers' record is something like 9-10. It's not good. It's sub 500. But against good teams, or teams with an above 500 record, their record is ridiculously good. And whether that's because Ben likes the spotlight, whether it's because they get that extra surge knowing they're going up against top-level competition, the good news for the Steelers right now is they've only got four or three teams actually on the remainder of the schedule that at least at this point have losing records. That would be the Bengals, the Browns, and the Colts. Everybody else currently has a winning record. Now, that may not stay the same, but, you know, it's a situation that does bode well, and we have a backloaded schedule with a lot more of the heavy hitters coming towards the end of the season, which, again, is good for us. On a little side note, just because I just saw this, the Ravens' miseries continue as Brent Urban has a Liz Frank injury, and so he's gone. They just keep dropping like flies. I do not know how that team managed to win the first two games with the way those things have fallen. But sorry to get off track on that. It just came up and I noticed it. And we have the Ravens this week. So, you know, it is annoying, let's put it that way, when they lose early in the season and they lose to these bad teams. But it's been that way, as you said, for many seasons now. And I don't know about you, but I have been adamant in stating that I think this has to do more than anything else with the way preseason works. Starters don't play hardly at all. What did Ben get? Two series in the entire preseason. And at no point did all the starters play together at any time. That's what I think September football is. Continuation of the preseason.
And I think, you know, when you see guys like Le'Veon Bell who didn't play a single snap the entire time, you know, I understand he trained and whatnot, but training and being on the field in live action are two completely different scenarios. You have a guy like him who missed the entire time. Martavis Bryant still knocking the rust off after not playing for 18 months. You know, it's not easy to just come in day one and be mid-season form. It's that are, you know, still trying to find that rhythm. I agree with the way that the CBA has the entire preseason lineup done the way it is, where you don't see a lot of these starters playing. You can do whatever you want to in practice. You're still getting repetitions. You're getting the mental reps. You're getting the film room work. That's all fine and great, but live action experience then too different from what you see on a practice field in a simulated setting. You know, so being able to actually get out there and play, you're still seeing the Steelers trying to work out the kinks. You're still trying to see guys find chemistry. You know, with Brian knocking off the rust, some semblance of himself from 2016, trying to build chemistry together. Even though they've been together for so long, you still have the developmental pains of a new season coming forth with it. And truth be told, this is one of the younger Steeler teams we've seen in a while. You have a lot of young guys still trying to get their feet wet with a lot of the schemes that they're trying to implement. Just the fast-paced nature of the NFL. Even guys in their second year like Sean Davis and Artie Burns, who have had their moments of looking like rookies again, they're still not veterans. They're still trying to get their feet wet. They're still trying to get a feel for the way the NFL works on a consistent basis. And when you miss a lot of the preseason, really this first quarter of the season is where you're kind of trying to iron those out. And luckily, the Steelers were fortunate enough to play some not elite teams at that point. But it's something that fans need to realize is a true reality and an unfortunate reality the way the NFL is set up now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if they go into Baltimore next week and beat a depleted Ravens team, even if it's an ugly win, which I would guess if they win, it could be an ugly win. It's always an ugly game when the Steelers and the Ravens play. You know, we come out of the first quarter of the season 3-1. That's a pretty good result for while you're getting your feet wet. And things just change once we get to October football. Ben gets crisper, the O-line performs better. And generally speaking, that's, you know, Le'Veon gets on track, the receivers are more in sync with Ben, and the defense is more solid as a unit. you know, the one thing that I did that I guess sticks with me and strikes me in watching these first three games, though, is that the O-line was supposed to be a big strength. And while I know that they got a lot of snaps during preseason, and they still are growing and everything, but it's not quite the same to me. It doesn't feel like they're right. You know, something just seems off. They're not being dominant. The run blocking seems inconsistent. They seem to have some issues in pass protection. I'm not sure what it is, but they don't feel right to me.
You know, I went into this season extremely excited because I felt like, you know, we had the same O-line returning from last year, which was a very strong group that's played together consistently now for an entire season, which is something that used to be 10 years ago or 8 years ago was unheard of on the Steelers offensive line. And now you have a group of guys that knows each other and has been there. They had solid depth behind them with Finney, Hubbard, Hawkins, and Filer. But, you know, something is up, and I'm not 100% certain what it is. You know, you can make the argument that they lost a lot of their rhythm this week against the Bears whenever Foster went down. They were already down Gilbert. But Finney proved last season that he was able to step into the limelight and, you know, show that he is a very reliable offensive lineman as a depth player. It was the Bills game I know that stuck out in my mind specifically where Le'Veon Bell went off, and that was largely due to the point that Finney was really a catalyst on that interior beside between Villanueva and Pouncey. But I don't know if it's communication issues, if it's them just not getting a whole lot of live action work during the preseason. I don't know. It's concerning to say the least because they have guys on that line that should be better. You know, you have DeCastro and Pouncey, who are both Pro Bowlers, all pro offensive linemen. You have Marcus Gilbert, who a lot of people, myself included, believe that he will be and should be a Pro Bowl caliber offensive lineman. Ramon Foster is, like you've always pointed out, he's the glue of that offensive line. He's the leader on and off the field in the locker room. You know, he's not a designated captain. You know, he's the guy that gets that line together. And, you know, one of the best improvements the Steelers have had. You know, a lot of fans were worried after losing Calvin Beecham. Villanueva came in and has done exceedingly well. You know, so to see the sacks happening, like the Steelers gave up 3 sacks, and a lot of them were kind of, in my mind, coverage related, but at the same time, the offensive line just crumbled. And I understand Bell's still trying to knock off the rust, but there have been very minimal holes for him to hit. You know, he's patient. He lets them develop. When they're not developing in front of him, he has no choice but to try to just put his nose down and try to hit what hole would be there and is not. So I don't know when it's going to pick it up. But at some point, if this offense really wants to get going, you know, you win games in the trenches, then the Steelers, quite frankly, just have not been winning up front like they need to and like they're used to doing over the recent years.
Yeah, it's the only area that gives me pause. Beyond that, I feel like this is just business as usual for this team. They start slow, and then they pick up steam. And hopefully that remains the same message. You know, we will have to wait and see what happens. But I am one who doesn't want to talk about the past three games anymore. It's Ravens week. And that's a big deal, and it should be a big deal. Conference, divisional conference foe, our biggest rival without doubt in my mind. And really, it's for first place in the division while it's still early. So I'm kind of ready to put everything else behind me. What about you?
Yeah, I think this is a real chance for the Steelers to come in there, put the first 3 weeks in the rear view, and show that they are the team that we expect them to be, that we think that they are. Because on paper, they have talent. You know, it's just a matter of it showing and coming to full fruition on the field. And I think the Ravens have some opportunity to show that and get something going there. You know, it's early in the season, but when you're tied 2-1 with your division rivals, what better way to get the season really rolling than to beat them, get 3-1 and take sole possession of first place in the AFC North. I see no better way of getting the season going and kind of putting all the doubts aside.
Yep. Let's close off September football with that. Zach, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been cathartic to me, letting us get our frustrations out and vent a little bit. Tell everybody again how they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, so you can reach out to me at GZSports_ZM. Zach Meckler, GZSR is my name on there. You can find me very easy. I look forward to interacting with all of you.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. Until next time, everybody, remember, it's Ravens week. So be good, be safe, and we will talk to you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.